Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics Podcast, a show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And today we have a very fun episode, possibly the most voices ever on the podcast. So I'm going to make sure to introduce everybody off the top. We have, amongst their other work, the team that has been working on The Wailing Blade, which is still out in comic stores now, and I'll let them talk about where we are issue-wise as of the recording and what more you can expect from The Wailing Blade and what The Wailing Blade is. But first up, I'll introduce over to my left, I'm assuming that's where he's standing, writer Rich Duick, that I've got to know through Comics Experience, and right now also has another book on the stands, Road of Bones through IDW. Hello, Rich. Good morning as we are recording, but whatever time you're listening, it could be good evening.
Hey, Joey, how's it going?
It's good. Thanks for making time for this.
No, thanks for having us on.
Excellent. And your artistic collaborator, let me check. I'm sure we haven't mentioned this guy on a past podcast recently. Wait, it's Joe Mulvey. Oh, no. Joe, I don't know if you heard that episode, but all we were doing was saying positive things about you.
I heard the unedited version, and I've got a lot of gripes with a lot of people.
We talked about you a few episodes ago. We were talking about The Wailing Blade, specifically about color. You are the artist working with Rich, and a return appearance after being on an episode with Heather Antos talking about color, one of my favorite episodes that we've done in a while, because it was such a great drill down on coloring and the process of making comics. It's Comics Experience. What were you calling him earlier, Joe? The White Wolf?
He is the White Wolf of comics. Like, if you guys have ever seen Pulp Fiction, and there's a big problem, and they say, call him the Wolf. Soto is the White Wolf.
I feel like
the White Wolf of comics.
I should have just let you introduce him. I feel like you would have given him a much better ramp-up.
Oh, man.
It's Chris Sotomayor, Soto, colorist.
Hey, Joey.
And White Wolf of comics.
What an intro.
This book's going to be late on deadline. Call me the White Wolf.
Well, thank you guys again for all making time to do this with all your schedules. But maybe, Rich, if you want to kick it off and talk about how specifically Wailing Blade started and what it is, and then how you got Joe involved, and then how you and Joe got Soto involved, and how it all kind of grew from there.
Sure. Wailing Blade was an idea I had for a series. After I finished up my first one, Gutter Magic, I was just looking to get some new stuff going. And I think I had the first kind of first kind of draft of it, I guess, in 2013 or so. And I found an artist, wound up falling through. It was probably for the better. Definitely for the better. sorry, Joe. I'm just saying.
Did I say that loud? I apologize.
It had a few kind of bumps along the road, but then at the same time, I had met Joe at New York Comic Con, and we had been seeing each other there every year and starting to hang out because we both live locally, and we were just thinking I'd really love to work on something, so we were just kicking some ideas. Work on something together. So we were just kicking some ideas back and forth, and he had seen Wailing Blade and he was interested in it. So we just started kind of developing it, and Joe did some sketches that I really loved, and I started writing more of the script, and just together we just started building the world together, and eventually we started chopping it around and to different publishers, and we wound up with Comic Strike, which is a great smaller publisher that we've both been very friendly with for years and years. And that's basically the story of how we got started. When we were looking for the colorist and letterer, we were initially went to Soto just for some recommendations because, he teaches the class. He works with a lot of really great, up-and-coming colorists. He knows everyone. So we were just kind of showing him the project, and it turned out that he was available to work on it. And not being idiots, we jumped at the chance to work with the Wolf. I mean, yeah, it's amazing. and then soon after, we got our letter, Taylor Esposito, and the rest is history. Right now, just because you asked before where we are, I think issue 3 is going to be coming out, I believe, next week or the following at the latest. Issue 3 is going to be coming out, and then issue 4 will be out after that. And then that's going to be the end of our first arc. We're going to put out a trade and then kind of like see where we are as far as like doing more.
Excellent. And we can do this Rashomon style. Now everyone can go give their version of the origin of Whaley Blade. I think it's especially for folks that listen to this podcast, one thing that my ears perked up to is you said 2013. You know, it's a gestation mm-hmm. period for a lot of comics, but especially stuff where you're going in with smaller publishers and you're looking to build a team and figure out how to make it go. Does mm-hmm. for you guys, and this is kind of for everybody, are there advantages you feel like, well, I don't have to rush this out, I can spend time, I can find an artist that I really click with, and maybe you and Joe were looking for other projects, but it sounded like, Joe, you were interested in doing this one after getting to know Rich, and stuff just a lot of times evolves organically to say, hey, I like this. This might not necessarily be in my wheelhouse, as maybe it's not a genre you love or thought about, but you jumped into it to start designing and figuring out where stuff could go.
Well, just giving a little bit of reference, networking and like kind of being around people and kind of building those relationships is 100% where they started. But the real diving board for all of this was that Rich took me out to a happy hour in Brooklyn, New York. And we were in Williamsburg. We were having some drinks and we were discussing how the artist had kind of just given up. And I won't name his name. He's a very talented artist. And he just kind of, I remember him like saying, you know what? Interiors are really hard. I don't think I want to do them. And at that moment, like Rich was real dejected and we were talking about it. And, you know, I think after a few beers, and I am not a fantasy kind of guy. It's not my normal inclination. I'm kind of a Batman, Daredevil, you know, street level kind of artist that I always kind of try to do. And then for some reason, after 5 to 6 Brooklyn Lagers, I said, you know what? Let's do this, you crazy kid. Let's just do something sci-fi and wacky and crazy. And that was the real onus of how we started. But yeah, it worked out really well. And then we went to Soto because we were looking for, I just kept pounding the idea of unique. And I'm sure Rich can speak more to this, but I said, like, I think a lot of the reason I didn't have love for the sci-fi post-apocalyptic kind of landscape was that everything felt homogenous or the same to me. I feel like a few TV shows or movies or books really did it well, and then everyone else kind of glommed off of those ideas. And I kind of wanted to make everything our own. So months and months and months of designing characters and trees and plants and soil and all that kind of stuff went into it. And then when we were looking for colorists, we wanted someone who could carry through this unique visual that the second you opened up a book, the Wailing Blade book, you knew you were in the world of Minturn and you were in the world of Wailing Blade. And once we went to the Wolf, he kind of guided us in the right direction. And
we're making the Wolf thing happen, whether you like it or not.
And if we could get it before you even say his name on this show, if we could just have a Wolf owl, I think it'd be amazing.
Just every time it's mentioned, we'll just do that in post.
Yeah, so we make the show into a drinking game. If you drink every time there's a Wolf Hour, you too can grow Wailing Blade.
Joe, what you were saying about like how you weren't really into like sci-fi and fantasy, I think that's really kind of what drove it to be a unique thing. Because I think probably the reason you feel like a lot of that sameness is because like a lot of people are like, you know, they're all fans of like the same thing, like let's say like Star Wars or whatever it is, and they're all kind of like drawing from the same sources, you know. So that I think that's kind of why you feel that like sameness in a lot of things. Whereas since you were not really kind of into that, it's like you were using like your own you know, designs and your own imagination. So I think ultimately, like, you not being super into sci-fi or fantasy, I think that actually really helped with, like, what you're talking about, like having a really distinct look that you're not seeing anywhere.
Well, I think that's something that's interesting in the book too, and fits as a reader and somebody that's seen some behind the scenes as you've developed it, Rich. The look is different. You guys have designed a very cool looking world, and the coloring plays a huge part of that when you see the non black and white art. And how much of that became how does that conversation evolve to, I want this to look like this kind of thing? And I'll liken it to Guardians of the Galaxy. The first movie had a different sci-fi look, I thought, from a lot of other kind of sci-fi looks. It was a kind of bold color choices at times, and the palette was different, but it still felt really sci-fi. It just wasn't dark, broody, you know, stuck in 1979 kind of Ridley Scott sci-fi.
I can only speak to how we kind of reached out originally to the wolf, and when we were saying to him, all right, you're right, Grimly, for having that. I kind of like just when we had reached out to him and asked him about colors, we kind of told him what we were looking for with a color palette, and a lot of times, and I'm sure to his detriment, especially when he came on the book, Chris was like, he's like, you know, what are you looking for in these kind of things? And then I was just like, I just want it to be unique. I don't want it to be the same kind of sky and the same kind of, you know, I just want it to be different, but also like its own. And then when Chris actually jumped on board and he goes, I'll do this, it was a lifesaver. Because like, as anyone will tell you, I'm a very open-lined artist, and a bad colorist can make me look god-awful, and a great colorist like Chris can make me look way better. So that was like a huge weight off my shoulders, knowing that someone like Chris was going to color it, because he's like he's my favorite. Just as a human being, the wolf is great. But when you get to like his skill on a comic page, it's unbelievable. So yeah, I mean, he can speak more to the actual palette choice, but he killed it on the book.
I mean, like, you know, kind of like, sort of, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I think this book could easily work. Like, if you're just going to do like dull earth tones and things like that, like, there's nothing that says that you couldn't do that, you know, like, but I just think then it just would have felt a lot more like stuff we're used to seeing and not really had that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I didn't want. Cause I mean, you guys were doing some things. The book is bonkers. And I certainly didn't think that making it look like Aliens or Blade Runner or even Akira or anything like that was going to work on this, on Wailing Blade. It had to be different. It had to be like you said, like Guardians of the Galaxy, like the first movie. So I like the fact that they didn't want to do anything, you know, dreary and just something that was just going to look at and just get sad or, you know, just feel wiped out. I wanted something a little more lush, and, you know, that was the vibe I was getting from Joe and Rich, that I had that kind of freedom. And I like freedom. I like freedom. I like doing new stuff. I like doing different things. You know, I anytime anyone throws something at me and they're like, hey, we want something different, we want something new, I'm on board. You know, that's an easy decision for me. And then, you know, Rich, I like a lot. Joe, I like a lot. Both very easy people to work with. They're a pleasure. They trust me. I can't ask for more than that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was just going to say, like, you know, I think that's the trust is like a big
no,
part
go
of
for
it is because it's like, you know, Soto, I mean, the wolf, has worked on, you know, he's worked on, you know, basically, like, you name, like, a Marvel character or a DC character, like, I'm pretty sure Soto's colored them. And, you know, he's just somebody who, with so much experience and knowledge that, like, you know, we know that he's bringing a lot to the table coming onto this project. And it would be kind of silly for us to be, oh no, you have to do X, Y, and Z, because, you know, we're inviting him to the table because we know that he brings a lot, you know, so we want kind of like, we want the whole wolf, you know, not just a couple of bites,
we don't just want the tail. We wanted to go full wolf on the book.
I also
want to say one thing. I don't normally read reviews about books, about especially anything I've ever worked on, because normally it's not positive. So
smart man.
So when I started reading the reviews that Richard sent me, like he was like going through the good ones, I can't tell you how many times reviewers, and if anyone's listening that reviewed it, thank you very much, they just literally wrote paragraphs about Soto's colors on the book, and specifically how rich the colors were, how the blood in Wailing Blade looks different than any blood anywhere, and how he added depth to all these different aspects of the book. And like, to me, that excites me, because now the fans are like kind of looking at every aspect of the book. And that's kind of, you know, also to like the credit of everyone involved. Like, I feel like what Taylor's doing with the letters is so involved. It's not just a regular lettering job. Like, he's really making different fonts and making the letters their own character in the book, as much as the colors are, as much as the writing is, and as much as the art is. So I feel like it's helped kind of guide a really, truly collaborative effort.
Taylor's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
On this book, Taylor's brilliant. I don't know about any other book. Yeah. Taylor's great. I mean, I like him too, just as a person, and I love his work, but on Wailing Blade, he pulled out all the stops, and I just think the whole book it looks so cohesive because of that.
Well, mm-hmm. We're coming out on the third issue, and we've all seen the fourth, and what he does on the fourth, with the double page spread, that, you know, now we're talking behind the scenes, but like, He really does make it a thing where you feel the letterer is part and parcel of the, you know, collaboration. I hate to say it, a lot of time a letterer, and I know they say it's good if a letterer is overlooked, it means that letterer has done their job. But
right,
to me,
they're visible. Yeah.
Right, but to me, on this series, I think Taylor stands out because the lettering is so intertwined with the narrative and the art of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like we told him, like, you know, it's like the book's called Wailing Blade, so like the whale is like, really, really important, you know. It's like the blade is almost like a character in itself. So we were like, you know how like I could show you a blank panel and it says like snicked or thwip, and what's coming, right? So we were like, we kind of want that iconic feel to like this you know, whatever sound effect you're going to wind up doing for the blade, and we you know, he did put a lot of thought into making it very iconic, like the way he does it. Like he does this really cool thing where like he does it like right along the edge of the blade, and it's like almost like cut off a little, so you really kind of feel like it's coming from the sword. And I it just blew me away like the first time I saw it, like when like the first proof for issue one came in, I was just like, oh, this is great. He's our guy.
Yeah.
Well, as somebody not directly involved with it, seeing the evolution is always cool, seeing the behind the scenes. But reading the comic, and I'd read different iterations of number one over time, and I'm curious to hear you guys talk about your Kickstarter experience with it too, because number one was also a Kickstarter comic. The second issue was where it kind of clicked, and I don't know, maybe it's getting back from knowing everyone involved. But it feels like a thing that's definitely out of love. Like, it has, there's such a fun twist in the issue two that I did not know was coming, that I was like, wait a minute, what's this going to be? Because you really do a great change up that as a reader I just didn't anticipate. So it in the best possible sense, it's almost like you're getting a, you know, you're at the video store, when there were video stores, I'll date myself, you see this awesome VHS cover and you go, that sounds like it's going to be the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. You pick it up and you're like, oh my god, people who made this really put a lot of time and love into it. And that's, I don't think comics always feels that way. Sometimes it feels like, not that you're just cashing, you know, a paycheck. I think people earning comics you're not getting rich unless you're a couple, you know, select folks in comics. But the big swirl of coming out the other side to this cohesive thing that feels like it is a lot of people on the same page, and maybe I'm just harping on the collaboration and the getting to know people side, but it seems like you guys have a really good back and forth, and you've already touched on it, just being able to talk about what you're trying to do, how you're trying to do it, having the freedom. Big scope career, was that always easy for you, or was this a project that's kind of like, no, this is where I am on my path, and right now I know how to make the best comics I can, and that's by working with a writer who wants to do this, that's by working with an artist who's open to doing this, and a colorist who's open to doing this, and all aiming for a similar target or the same target?
I'm just going to say this. I think the big thing for this is that we all kind of know each other. Like, I know I knew Taylor a little bit from kind of tangentially working on other stuff. Like, I had a story in an Image anthology, so I met him at some signings, and I had known him from working with other people. But I knew Rich, and I knew Soto, and sorry, the Wolf. And in knowing them, there was this comfortability. Like, I'm, as an artist, sometimes I know artists are a little gentle or fragile, and I'm the opposite of it. And I'm like, I'll turn in a page to Soto, and I'll be like, look, this is complete hot garbage. I don't know what I tried here. You know, just save me on the colors. And then he'll try to keep me from jumping off a ledge and be like, no, it's not good. I like this. I like that. You know, like...
No, he'll say it's not bad.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man, you guys got me figured out.
It's true. It's not bad. He would be a great psychologist, comic psychologist. And the Wolf.
That's another spinoff.
Look, it's Frasier starring Chris Sotomayor.
Oh, I'm in.
But like also with Rich, like, Rich gave me... I've worked with writers before who were very, almost, even though it was a creator-owned or a collaborative thing, it made me feel like work for hire rather than I was allowed to actually contribute ideas. And I think that kind of, that open idea that we can all contribute and all have ideas and all... change things up, I think, is kind of what helped make the book so unique.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, I think kind of like from the, maybe it's more from like the business side of things, it's like kind of drilled into you that like your first issue is like so important. You know, it's like the most important issue of the series, you know, because it's the one that gets the most hype and like all that. But like, kind of, I think like one like ironic thing about it is that the first issue is like where, like, as a team, you're still kind of like finding your feet as far as working together goes, you know, you're like, and then it's like, so it's like every issue that you go along, you kind of, you're getting more used to it. You're getting more into the process and things are going smoother and smoother. So it's like, I think in a weird way, you can kind of see that progression in Wailing Blade where it's like, not that anyone's unhappy with one, but I think it's just like by the time we get to like 2, 3, 4, it's like we're like more and more in sync. So you kind of like get, I think things just sort of like escalate like in quality every issue to the point where I can say that, like, you know, there's like, we're doing stuff in issue 4 that, you know, we've probably never even imagined we would be doing when we first started.
Excellent. The point of the show ostensibly is to talk about people making comics that are at different stages in their career. And I always think about one thing that Soto said years ago, and I don't remember if it was, I know you actually said it. So I think it was maybe a Comics Experience workshop, because I remember distinctly you talking about conventions. And it really, it's something I think about anytime I'm at a convention. Just in general, it's one of those things, but you articulated it. You verbalized, hey, if somebody's busy, just leave them alone and give them a, hey, I'll come back and talk to you when you're less busy. Not that I think most people, you know, you might subconsciously know that, but from a breaking in standpoint, it always kind of stuck with me of, oh, that's right. You really need to, if I'm talking to Soto and I don't know him very well, he's got an editor from Marvel that's, hey, I'm here to talk to you. Whatever it is, it might not even be that. Hey, I'll come back and talk to you later. You know, it's such a basic piece of advice, but just the common courtesy of, I think, how you can run your career in comics is just being so aware of what's going on with other people, especially in a convention. And you guys have talked a lot about getting to know each other over time and collaboration, and I think that's a, you know, that can be a hard starting point for people that might be introverted, might be shy, might be, I can only go to one convention a year because I work in my day job and I really want to, you know, try to find a writer or colorist to collaborate with because I'm an artist. Do you have any general advice for just getting to know people? I know, Joe, you talked about you and Rich getting to know each other because you live near each other and got on really well, but any things that has helped you in your careers, like one or two thoughts of how you can start collaborating with people or reaching out?
Go ahead, Rich. Go ahead, you're the writer. You go first. Sorry.
If I know that I'm going to be at the same convention as Soto, what I try to do is email him like 2 or 3 weeks before and just say, hey, I'd like to come by like Friday, 2 p.m. If you have the time. And, you know, like we work it out because he's a very busy man. He's the wolf. You know? So, he's just booked solid. You know? So, he... Sorry, Joe.
Sorry?
Go for it.
I heard it. I heard it distinctly in the background.
Yeah, that was me. My dog was just looking at me like, what are you doing? So the other thing I would just say, like, if you want to just network, I mean, Joey, is that kind of the bit of the question? Like, how do
yeah.
you just kind of...
How do I get to yeah. know a Soto? How do I get to know a Joe Mulvey?
Okay, well, you could just come up and talk to me. Whatever an introvert is, I'm the opposite, right? Like... and at conventions even more so, because like there's so many people whose work I just insanely love, and I want to meet them and I want to talk to them, and I like to go out after the con, and I've been known to have 10 to 15 beers like a gentleman, pinkies out, and talk with people. And I just find the whole creative kind of community to be very welcoming. I haven't had really many bad experiences, but at the same time I may be too stupid to know when they've happened. So to me, the thing is to remember that most creators that I've met, I literally can only remember two bad interactions, and they were from decades ago. I feel like most people who work in comics now, especially people that are doing shows, they know that they're there, number one, to meet fans and meet readers, but they also want to meet other collaborators, and comics is very cyclic. So, you know, the person who's really trying to get a book done today and is a writer, in 5 years could be writing, you know, some of the most popular books on the stands. Like, it's all about doing the hustle and doing the work. And even if you have a bad experience at a convention or with one creator, don't let that carry over, because the majority of people in the industry are insanely supportive, insanely nice, and also insanely busy. So if you don't get this chunk of time with someone that you wanted, like your favorite cover artist is busy, she can't talk to you, or your favorite colorist is busy, it's not a slight. Don't take anything too personally. Just understand that, you know, editors are super busy. Well, you know, artists are super busy at shows. They're doing stuff. So it's not that they're not making time. It's just that they're busy. But at the same time, you'll never know unless you reach out to them and try to talk to them. Unless you want to talk to someone for a half hour, then you come over to my table, where I'm happy to talk about anything ad nauseum.
Go buy some of Joe's comics. Joe, if you're not familiar with Joe, I love Scam still. That's something I still pull off the shelf from time to time. So,
thanks, dude.
Talk to Joe. Look through his stuff.
I think a big thing is sort of like keeping an open mind and like approaching it with like openness. So it's like, you know, say you're like a huge fan of Soto and you want him to color your book, right? You know,
gosh.
So you go meet him at a convention, and you're like, hey, here's my idea for a book, blah 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 blah, and I really want you to color it. Now, he's not gonna like say yes or no on the spot, because, you know, he doesn't really know you, and he doesn't know whether you're a flake or whatever. And you know, number one, and he's also got his whole like schedule lined up for like, you know, the next like few months. So it's like, so rather than that, you would just say like, oh, hey, I'm looking for a colorist. And Soto might say, oh yeah, well, you know, let me see. This sounds really interesting. Here's my email. Get in touch with me. Or he might say, you know what? There's a student in my comics experience class that I think this is right up their alley. They would love to do this. Or he might say, you should talk to so-and-so, you should talk to this or that, you know? So it's like, I kind of feel like when you have your like heart set on like one person or like one solution, that's kind of when you
get yourself into trouble, because it like builds up a lot of pressure and it just kind of makes it uncomfortable for everybody. If you kind of approach it with like, you know, you're not trying to like get something specific out of the person, you're just trying to have a conversation, you're just trying to get to know them a little bit, I think it becomes a lot easier to just sort of build a relationship where you might be working together someday. Or
well, can I also throw out something, Rich, to interject?
Sure, yeah.
Isn't it more important to have at least a relationship first? Like maybe go introduce yourself first time.
Totally.
Ask if it's okay for an email. Because I have had people come up to me at shows and just offer me work and I don't know them. And it's not like they're working with a publisher. I've had many times the person telling me, I have the next Walking Dead. Do you want to work with me? And I'm like, yeah, my schedule's really not. And then it turns into a cursing thing of, you're going to regret this. You idiot. You're going to regret not working with me. And you know, you don't want to be that kind of person. You just want to first introduce yourself and then, you know, kind of let the relationship go from there. Like you want to have the person know you, have a little bit of trust in you, have a little bit of dialogue before just cold offering the wolf a job.
Yeah. I mean, like if you want to, if you're carrying around like a briefcase full of $100 bills and you want to slam it down on the table and be like, you know, you're going to color my next book, you know, that's one thing. But it's like, if you're sort of like, hey, I got this really cool idea for a comic I want to do, and I'm a big fan of yours, it's like there's a few steps in between saying that and saying, I want you to come work on my book. You know, I think what kind of like what we're all like saying in different ways is that, you know, we call it networking, but it's really about just sort of like building relationships and building kind of like trust and goodwill. You know, it's like because when you know comics, making comics takes a lot of time, a lot of money, and a lot of effort, and that's, I don't think, no matter what job you do in comics, writer, artist, colorist, whatever, it's like you don't want to be wasting that time working with people that are either going to be difficult to work with or maybe haven't thought, you know, the project through enough or that you might not get along with. So you kind of, or even not get along with, maybe you just have like different working styles and they don't gel. So it's like there really does kind of need to be this kind of like getting to know you period where you just sort of check this person out and you see if like your sensibilities match. You know, nobody wants to sort of feel like they're a hired gun, not bringing anything to the table. I mean, you know, you might do it from time to time just for a paycheck, but that's not like that's something. You know, you get your paychecks from corporations. You don't get your paychecks from like other people. It's like when you're working with like collaborators, it's like you want to collaborate. So, you know, it's like I think it's just, you know, kind of like the community we're in is exactly that. It's a community. So you got to kind of try to be a part of it before you can really start. You know, making those kind of moves.
Cultivate those relationships, get to know people, see if it clicks, and can move on from there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like it's not always going to click, and that's okay, because there's no like, you know, do or die. Like, you know, there's a ton of talented people out there, and if, you know, the person you had your heart set on, if it doesn't work out, you know, it's sucks, but it's okay. You know, you can find somebody else that's going to do a great job, and you know, kind of, you might even be wind up being better. You know,
look at him. Because, look, I see what you're doing. I see what you're doing right now. I see what you're doing, Duick.
You are so insecure, Moby. Come on.
It's not that I'm insecure; it's that I'm short. Okay.
If I had known you were interested at the time I turned up, you would have been my first choice.
Well, that's when you had your I only work with artists 5'10 and taller. That's when you had that installed, and I said, that's some bullshit. That's some bullcaca.
It's a very, very limiting rule you have, Rich. Gotta be close to your height or no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Joe wears platform shoes sometimes when he's around.
But I look great in them. I look really good.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you should see how short he is when he doesn't have them on. It's like he's like a hobbit.
Joe's two children in an overcoat.
I like how you didn't give him the three. You just made it two.
So much. That explains so much.
Yeah. Explains why I wear the overcoat everywhere I go.
This Wailing Blade number one was kickstarted. You guys had a successful Kickstarter, and Joe, I know with the other Comics Tribe work that you've done, there's been some other kickstarting. Was there a reason that led you guys to go for kickstarting that first issue? What's the, maybe quickly talk through your thought process and what that's like, because, you know, crowdfunding just seems to keep evolving. 5 years ago seems very, very different than now, and 10 years ago, I don't know if it was the thing that far back. So it offered you guys an avenue to get the book out to a different audience before you started going through comic shops.
Yeah, 100%. To be honest with you, it's very much part and parcel of working with Comics Tribe. Tyler, who's pretty much the main operator over at Comics Tribe, does another website, does another series of podcasts called Comics Launch, and it's really all about podcasting. The information he has about kickstarting and crowdfunding.
Yeah,
and he's a huge proponent for Kickstarter. And honestly, he sees it as like a completely different revenue stream for comics. Like, comics do very well on the Kickstarter platform. Tyler knows the ins and outs of it, like clockwork. So if anyone's listening to this and crowdfunding is something they're thinking of doing with their books or anything really, I couldn't recommend going and listening to his show, Comics Launch, enough, because he really does break down every single part of the process. And at the same time, it builds excitement, because you're then going, you're funding the first issue, but you're also getting people the previews, getting people the first issue, and getting people to see everything. So it's kind of like you get promotion out of it while you're still selling the product and while you're still getting an engaged fan base interested in the IP overall.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, one of the things that kind of opened my eyes with talking to Tyler about Kickstarters is that it's like, there is like some crossover between people who go to comic shops, but there's also this like huge group of people who just like comics, but they're not going into the shop every Wednesday. And like most of the people that are pledging on Kickstarter are people who get most of their comics like through Kickstarter or other online venues. So it's like, you're not kind of like, it's not like somebody's gonna buy it on Kickstarter and then that like means you're losing sales in the comic shop, you know? So that was really eye-opening. And like, I think another thing is just that I think like when Kickstarter first started, it was sort of like had this impression of like, you know, well, you know, we want to make this thing, and if you're pledging it, you're kind of taking a chance. Like, maybe it'll get made, maybe it won't. Whereas nowadays, as platforms evolved and crowdfunding has become so much more commonplace, it's almost more just like a pre-order system. It's like, you know, we've got the book, you know, we're going to do it. We're just trying to like get some interest and raise some money to like do even more stuff. So I think that's like a big difference with like crowdfunding today and crowdfunding when it first started. And I don't think there's any kind of like stigma about it today. Like, you know, it used to kind of be that I think sometimes like you'd get the impression like, oh, well, they're Kickstartering because they couldn't find a publisher. But that's not necessarily the case now. A lot of very successful creators do Kickstarters because it just kind of makes sense for their business model, you know, like it's a way to kind of keep a little bit more control over like where your money's going. Like, you know, you're going to be choosing the printer and you're going to be distributing it and stuff like that, which is work, but it's you know, there's definitely like upsides to it as opposed to going with the traditional publishing model.
Excellent. I think it's hard to get into Kickstarter and crowdfunding without wanting to go down a larger rabbit hole. I don't want to go too far down because I know we're about 40 minutes in, and I want to be mindful of everyone's time. I guess to wrap it up, is there anything you guys would want, specifically the folks that listen to this show that are comics creators, people thinking about making comics? And I know sometimes people just like to listen to the show because it's about process. Anything that you think would be interesting to them to hear about how to get that book across the finish line, or even just start making a page of comics, doing a one pager or five pagers?
Well, I'll just say this off the bat. Anyone who wants to make comics, go make comics. Like, there's no barrier anymore. Like, now we're talking about crowdfunding. Crowdfunding is the litmus test of, is your product ready for the market? Because there is a ton of people on Kickstarter that want to check out new books, want to check out quality books, and are willing to pay for your product regardless of what you've done in the past. So there is a storefront digitally out there for you to be able to sell whatever it is you make. So if you feel like a publisher, an editor, or someone's just not giving you an opportunity, there's no excuse anymore. The opportunity is yours. So go make comics. And then in speaking, what I think is my most enjoyable part about making Wailing Blade is that I genuinely enjoy working with everyone involved. And I've said this before, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself. I don't think I've ever had as much fun on working on something as I have on Wailing Blade. And to me, that generates hopefully to the product and hopefully to the reader. So the big thing I would say is, I know a lot of people, it's arduous and there's a lot of heavy lifting in comics, but you've got to be having fun while you're doing it. You know, like, fun to me is a massive key in doing anything. And, you know, just try to enjoy it. Like, a lot of the process stuff I've listened to, and I love this show, and I've listened to the show, and I think all of you that are on this show, like, I think Heather is extremely insightful. Joey, you're fantastic. I apologize if I'm forgetting other names. But, like, the main thing I hear is there's so much instructional stuff that all of it's out there for you to listen to, all of it's out there for you to learn from. But just make sure what you're doing, you're enthused about, because that enthusiasm genuinely connects to other people. And I think that's why, like, comic creators are great, because you go and you talk to them at shows and they're just genuinely excited to talk about their product or their art or their writing or their colors or anything. So, you know, try to have fun and try to, you know, show people why your fun is infectious.
Rich, any thoughts on getting started? What motivated you to start doing comics?
Well, I mean, it's something that I had always wanted to do, you know, since I was a comics fan, like, as a kid. And then I think when I kind of got back into them as an adult, I knew I always wanted to write. And then it was just sort of like, well, I love comics, I love writing, so maybe I should give that a try. And I really was, but I had, like, no idea how to get started. Like, I would, like, kind of found a couple of scripts online, but I didn't really understand the scripting process, which is why the intro to writing class was such, like, a big help for me. You know, like, I kind of came out of that class with a 5-page story, kind of knowing how to do it. Then did a few more shorts, and then I just sort of, like, never looked back. Like, I, you know, my class project was like a gutter magic short, and then I just kind of kept developing that into a series. So I guess my advice would just be similar to Joe's, is like just make stuff, and don't be worried about things needing to be, like, perfect. You know, I think you kind of have to have this weird mix of, like, pride and humility. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be, like, have enough pride to think, like, okay, like, I you know, I have something to say, I know what I'm doing, and, like, I can write things. But you also have to, like, have the humility to realize that, like, you're just starting out and you're still learning, and, you know, maybe someday you will be the next Alan Moore, but you're not the next Alan Moore yet. You know, so you kind of like you're going to write stuff that you're not 100% happy with, and you're going to write stuff that could be better, but you kind of have to realize that, you know, when that happens, two things. Like, number one, nobody, if you're not happy with it, nobody has to see it besides you. And number two, there's the way to improve is to like just to just keep doing it. So I'm writing new Gutter Magic, but like new issues for the series that are going to start coming out next year with Source Point Press and Comics Experience. And I've been showing the scripts to Andy because he's been editing the line. And he said to me, he was like, wow, he's like, you know, these scripts are like, they're so much better than like the original series. Like, he's like, you know, everything's like really smooth and like, you know, you handle the pacing and transition well. And I said to him, I was like, yeah, I should hope so. I mean, I wrote those first scripts like about like 7 years ago. So it's like, if they were kind of like the same level of quality as the original ones, I think we might have a problem. You know, it's like I've been doing it for a while and you know, I've gotten better at it, you know? And it's like, it's a weird thing because at the time, like when I wrote those original Gutter Magic scripts at the time, I was like, this is the best thing I've ever written. Turns out that happens with every new thing, hopefully. You know what I mean? So it's like you just kind of have to keep going and keep finishing things, even if you're worried that they're not going to be perfect, even if you're you feel like they could be better. It's like you just keep finishing things. It's like finishing. If you finish a 5-page short story, you are leagues and leagues ahead of the person who has you know, the idea for an 800-page series of graphic novels that they're constantly tinkering with and are never going to get one page of script down because they're just driving themselves crazy with needing everything to be like ready. You know, it's like you just got to dive in, just keep doing it, do more, start small with like what you can do in your life. You know, if you say like, a lot of people say write every day. You know, that's great for people who don't have day jobs and families and stuff. So it's like, if you can write every day, great, write every day. If you can write every weekend, write every weekend, or draw every weekend. Or, you know what I mean? You just got to kind of find a way to integrate it into your life where you keep doing it, and you'll do more and more, and it'll get better and better. And that's about it.
And what is the wolf thing?
Yeah. without reiterating what these other two guys said, I will say networking is, of course, very important. If you want to double back to that, and not just at conventions, social media is wonderful for that. Also, take advantage of relationships you can build on social media, but not just in terms of, oh, hey, this is a person who could really further my career, let me talk to them. You know, talk to like-minded people. Some of the advice that, like, I give my kids and my parents gave me growing up was surround yourself with people who are like-minded, who have similar goals. You know, do that on social media, too. Do that in your real life. Seek out people at conventions, at comic signings, you know. Anywhere where you're going to be, try to be around like-minded people that are goal-oriented, you know, and set up small goals for yourself. Use Facebook, use Twitter, use Instagram to get your stuff out there. Message boards, like the Comics Experience message boards are great for that, for networking. You know, there's always writers and artists looking to collaborate on there. I'm sure Rich has pulled some talent from there. I know I have. In the past, and don't be a dick. when you see people in real life, don't be an ass. You know, don't think that you have access to them like you're entitled to this access. You know, just because you you know their name on social media, or you know that they're what their dog's name is, or whatever that is. You know, be cordial, be nice, be a human being. Be like anyone mm-hmm. you're going to meet for the first time. You know, act like that. Don't have that level of familiarity just because you know them from another thing. You know, reintroduce yourself, start a conversation. Like Rich and Joe were alluding to, I never work with anyone first time I meet them. I know a lot of professionals who don't do that. I try not to ever work with friends. You know, I work with Joe and Rich on Wailing Blade because I like the vision that they had for the book, and I like them as people. I think we're all like-minded, and I think we work well together. But I've had relationships with friends that, you know, I try to turn into working relationships, and that shit goes south. And it goes south fast. I never would have jumped on Wailing Blade if Joe and Rich hadn't trusted me as much as they did, and number two, if I felt our relationship wasn't strong enough, and if I thought that we weren't all like-minded in a lot of ways. Mm. I've told Joe this before, and Rich before, that when we were working on this book, and I say were because they're all wrapped up now, I think by the time issue 2 hit the stands, we were done with everything. You know, when we started working on this book, I told them that we're allies. You know, if Joe's not sure about something, I'm going to come in and I'm going to get his back on it. If I've screwed something up, you know, Rich will come in and he'll be like, hey, you know, this should really be more like this. You know, and we all work together. And that's why I think Wailing Blade looks so cohesive. It gels so well together, right from the writing down to the lettering. I think that you have a bunch of relationships in comics that work like that because everyone's looking out for each other. That collaboration is really the best part of comics. And that's why I always recommend to everybody, you know, try to do as much networking as you can in all of its different forms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just one thing I just want to like say about like social media, that kind of dovetails with what like Soto was saying is like, if I were new, I would do my best to avoid the temptation to get sucked into like the drama
of
social media. And like, you know, there's a lot of people who rile things up and, you know, just sort of cause drama because, you know, at the end of the day, it makes some of the money. Other people are just looking to troll people. And it's just like, you know, it's kind of tempting to like sort of like dive in and get involved in that stuff. But the way I look at it is, you know, most of the people that are really focused on that are not focusing on what they need to do, which to be a successful creator, which is create stuff. So it's like, I'd say, you know, like everyone is entitled to their opinion and everyone has the right to voice their opinion. But so like, you know, dive in if you want, but I was just going to say like, don't let that kind of pull you away from like what you're there for. It's like, you know, you should be on social media to make connections with people and to kind of bring positivity to everything and you know, like get to know people, not to like you know, throw yourself into the breach because, you know, it's just not going to help you achieve your goals.
If you want to be professional, I've heard a bunch of working pros and editors and all that stuff talk about how your online feeds, your Instagram, your Twitter, your Facebook, those are almost extensions of your resume, and you have to treat it as such, because if you are out there screaming about everything and fights and this and that, that kind of speaks maybe to who you are, even though I don't believe that to be the case. Like, you want to, you know, you want to kind of put your best foot forward, and you want to show people that you're not just all, you know, hate and anger and confrontation and all that stuff. That said, I will be complaining about the New York Rangers during the hockey season on all of my social media feeds. So just get ready to deal with it. And if anyone listening to this podcast doesn't go up to the Wolf's table at any convention.
How?
We have done this show wrong, ladies and gentlemen.
This is going to be a thing.
Oh my God.
Failed in the mission. Well, speaking of social media, so we can let everybody get back to their work, their work days. What's a good place to find you, Rich? Where should folks look for you and your work?
You should look for me at Rdouek, R-D-O-U-E-K, three vowels in a row. I know it's complicated, but I believe in you. I believe in you, and I think you guys can find it. That's me on Twitter and Instagram, and then on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/richdouek, and you'll find me. I think in terms of like activity, I'm probably most active and accessible on Twitter. That's what I use the most, but I'm always happy to talk to people, so just reach out.
And right now you also have Road of Bones coming out through IDW.
Yes, that issue 4 of Road of Bones is going to be out next week, and it's been doing really well. So we've got if you're unable to find any of the first 3 issues, they're all getting second printings. In the case of the first issue, it just got its 3rd, so you should be able to find the entire series pretty easily.
And that is a period piece with prisoners escaping a Russian gulag.
Yeah, it's, they're escaping the Russian gulag into Siberia with not enough food, which is a high tension situation. And and you'll see how things play out when you read the book.
I am cold every time I read it.
Yeah. No, I'm working with
Alex
Cormack on that, mm-hmm. and Joe. This is a sore point between me and Joe, because since it takes place in Siberia, there's backgrounds are pretty simple. There's a lot of white, a lot of gray,
a lot of snow.
Rich, I didn't want to get into Rich. Don't end the show on a bad note.
Okay.
Oh.
But I think, it's because I know Joe can rise to the challenge. I have faith in Joe that whatever I throw at him is going to turn a beautiful page around. And if he doesn't, we've got the Wolf to save him.
Well, it sounds like, Joe, your next collaboration with Rich is in a white room. That's the entire series. It's all in one space.
I will say
Joe
this.
Gets to pick next, the setting of the next book.
The next setting of the Wailing Blade arc will be in a desert. that's an easy thing to draw, because it's like you could kind of see, and it's a great lesson for listeners, when you have a frustration against your artist on one book, you should passive-aggressively troll him in the next book you create, because it's nice when someone's drawing coliseums full of people and banners and all this kind of stuff, and then he just says, snow mound in the background of the entire other book.
24 pages of snow. Joe, where can people find you?
In an insane asylum after doing backgrounds as Wailing Blade. But online, I will be, my name is Joe Mole, J-O, no, sorry, J-O-E.
It's early in the morning, Joe's pretty drunk.
It's true, M-U-L-V, it's an abbreviation of my last name, because Joe Mulvey is evidently some sort of Canadian fisherman that won't give me the Twitter handle. So it's J-O-E-M-U-L-V on Instagram and Twitter. And I have open DMs, so if anyone ever wants to contact me and ask me any questions, please feel free.
Go follow Joe for the warm-up sketches alone. It's always fun to see what you're warming up with.
Oh, thanks, man. Those are a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you have anything you can announce yet that's in the works?
I can't. I'm working on something right now as we speak, but I cannot announce anything just yet.
We will stay tuned. And speaking of not being able to announce things, last time Soto was on the show, he had talked about something that he had just apparently finished the cover for, that I emailed you once there was an announcement. You got The Question coming out.
Yes. Yeah, The Question. Jeff Lemire is writing a new Question Black Label series for DC Comics that brings Dennis Cowan back to the character, along with his partner in crime, Bill Sienkiewicz. And then there's me.
the perfect way to round that out.
Yeah. So, that book will be starting to roll out towards the end of the year, November. No stress, right? Jeff Lemire, Dennis Cowan, Bill Sienkiewicz, and me. you can guess who the weak link is.
It looks excellent. That first cover.
Not nice.
I have so much anxiety about this book. But listen, I love Dennis. Dennis and Bill are my two favorite comic artists, and they're, you know, they both vie for the number one spot on any given day for me. I love both their work, you know, and Dennis is directly responsible for me being in comics. So I have a lot of love for both of them. So the question series, I'm on Batman Beyond at DC Comics, doing some covers at Marvel, organizing a charity book, which I'll get into at another time. And I also want to say just about Joe and Ridge real quick. I'm excited for both their careers, whether it winds up being together or independent of each other, because seeing the momentum that Rich has right now makes me really happy. And knowing Joe's tenacity and his attitude towards comics, and just seeing his growth from Scam to Wailing Blade, it's phenomenal.
What? All right, I want that soundbite.
I'm sorry, I wasn't recording. What was that? Can we have it? That's the other kind of fun secret that you, or maybe not so secret, that you learn about comics is you get to meet people and then start to watch their progression and then root for them even more to see how they're going for it. That's a great sentiment to have in general, but especially to end on. And Twitter and Facebook, are Instagram, best places to find you, Soto?
Yeah, Soto Color for all of them. Twitter, Twitch, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Just put Soto Color, SOTOCOLOR, in any of the searches, and you'll find me. You'll find videos. You'll find images. You'll find my Soto Color Facebook. If you wind up finding my personal Facebook page, it's very different. I'm an asshole on there. So you don't find that.
Impossible.
There's a lot more cakes. That's
yeah.
A lot more cakes, and you will want to eat all of those cakes when you see them.
Oh my God! Yeah, my wife. It's Just Cake NY on Facebook. Yeah, she's great too.
And the other thing too is Soto teaches the intro to coloring and then the other coloring classes at Comics Experience. So if you listen to the episode with Heather Antos or want to go back and listen to that, he talks a bit more specifically about color and approach, and you and Heather talk a lot about workflow and comics production in general. But if you want to be able to interact and have critiques and to have a structured kind of intro to coloring, it's a great place to start. As a non-colorist, I find it super interesting to figure out how to best work with, you know, a team. That's kind of the other puzzles you are solving from the get-go in comics, having never done comics, is how do I interact with people? And I think you guys have really talked a lot about that and building camaraderie and relationships, and especially when stuff doesn't click, because that happens a lot. things fall apart for various reasons.
I don't want to have Soto overrun at every convention, but I think it's fair to say that Soto is a almost like a guru or like a grand ambassador for comics. Because I'm serious, man. If you go around his table at a convention, there will be other colorists, other artists, other inkers, everyone comes around and asks the grand poobah, the wolf, for his opinions on how to handle things. And I mean, like, Soto's just a phenomenal person, but, like, in the world of comics, I don't think you could find a better person, human being, or talent than Soto. Because he will try to help you and guide you in everything. So go to his table, howl your face off, and then ask for career advice. It works.
Well, I think we're going to wrap it up on that note. Thanks a lot for your time, guys. Wailing Blade in stores now. Go find it. Rich, Joe, and Soto, really appreciate it. Until next time, keep White Wolf in comics.
Sorry, Joe.